On today's season three premiere of The Terry Collins Show, we bring on one of the biggest names in entertainment, and he is one of the biggest diehard Met fans there is. Currently on tour nationally, the man whose show Seinfeld remains one of the most iconic programs in television history. Let's welcome to a very special Talking with TC, Mr. Jerry Seinfeld. Jerry, pleasure to meet you here, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Terry. Great to be here. How you doing, Terry?
I'm doing fine, Jerry. I'm doing great. Thanks for coming on. This is very special. You know, I go back to when I was managing the Mets, and I got to meet you that one day in spring training, and I was dying to have you come out on the field the next day, but I know you were a busy man, but that would have been a lot of fun.
I remember, and I even remember your sunburn from that day, Terry. I don't know if you remember.
Get them a lot, Jerry. I get them a lot, you know. I'm in that sun all the time, so.
Yeah.
You're in New York now?
I'm in Long Island now.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I guess I want to start out by saying, tell me how you became a Mets fan. I mean, you know, well, New York got in.
Well, I'm
Yankee tradition.
I'm born in Brooklyn, and then the folks moved out to Long Island when we were little kids. And yeah, there was Yankees and there was Mets, and I used to watch them both. And there was just something about the Mets. I mean, we're talking the 60s now. Uh-huh. There was something about the Mets, the names, the colors, the attitude, there was something goofy about it. And just kind of, you know, I'm an offbeat guy, and I don't like the straight ahead world. I like the comedy. I mean, I live in the comedy world. So, and the Mets just seemed to be more fun, and they were new, and I love Mr. Met, and I have a crazy story. I got a call. Someone was doing a book on Joan Payson, who was one of the original owners of the Mets in the 60s. If you don't mind me launching into a story here.
No, go.
It's a pretty amazing story. So they were doing a book on Joan Payson and asked if I would be willing to contribute or talk to them about Joan Payson. I said, you know, I was a little kid. I never met Joan Payson. There's really nothing I can contribute to this. Thank you for asking. And a few days after that, my sister, who's also a business manager, was talking with the Mets about I have a season box there, and we were making a deal to do the season box of me to go in the booth sometimes. And, you know, she helps me deal with a lot of things. So anyway, they worked the whole thing out, whatever it was. And they were so appreciative of my sister helping them. They sent her a big one of those fruit baskets with a bunch of stuff in it. And she wasn't home, and it went to the people that lived across the street from her. They said, would you hold this? It's for your next door neighbor. And she got home and she saw the note. She walks across the street, and the girl says, I think someone left me a fruit basket here. It was from the Mets front office. And she said, yeah, oh, thanks. She said, and had all this Mets stuff in the fruit basket, you know, whatever it was, you can imagine. And the girls who's her neighbor said, oh, this is so cute, all this Met stuff. My grandmother was Joan Payson.
No.
Which my sister never knew. Of course, how would such a thing would never come up. So her next door neighbor who took this fruit basket from the Mets says, and this is, and 2 days earlier, I get, these kind of things happen to me all the time. But this was one of my real world champion, crazy coincidence things. So the woman says, my grandmother was Joan Payson. She used to own the Mets. So of course, you know, I'm getting tingles just telling you this story. And then of course, then I said, of course, let me contribute to the book. You know, it was like, it was like a message, you know, you get these things happening in the universe, you know. And so I don't know what I did. I talked to them about Joan Payson, whatever I remember. She was just this cute little old lady. Do you remember her at all, Terry?
I just remember her name, Jerry. I didn't, you know, when I got involved at the major league level, you know, they had been sold many times, but
right,
you know, I'm a baseball fan also at heart. So right. I know the Paces. I remember the Double Days and, you know, all those names, but I didn't get to meet those people.
Right. But isn't that pretty wild?
That's a wild, you know, especially when the neighbor had to know that was your sister and, you know, your affiliation with your love for the Mets, not to bring it up. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, no, she never thought to bring it up. I think, and it was her grandmother.
Oh, I'll be darned. So Jerry, growing up, following the Mets, who was your favorite Met?
Oh, Seaver? Tommy Agee, all day long. And I did a show this past summer. I'm going to go get this and show it to you because it's right behind me. I have a little shrine behind me. Those are, I don't know if you can see, these seats. These are box seats from the Polo Grounds that I bought on eBay. It's three seats. And I have all my, I made a little shrine there from my first pitch that I threw July 5th, 2019, where I threw a strike and from the rubber. Have you ever seen this pitch, Terry?
Well, I want to see it. Do you have it?
No, I don't have it, but it's on YouTube.
We'll put it in the show.
Okay.
This is the greatest moment.
And DeGrom was pitching that night.
That's right, he was. And I just put on any Mets shirt I had. It happened to be a DeGrom shirt. But anyway, so I did a show this summer, and this guy, for whatever reason, wanted to give me something special, and he got me Tommy Agee's bat from the 1969 World Series. I'm going to get it for you right now.
My gosh. Yeah. Oh, this is too cool.
That's a memento for sure.
This is too cool.
All right, here it is. I mean, I get a lot of crap. You know, when you're in show business, people just give you crap. And you just don't, you don't want any of it. But this was the greatest. Let me see if I could get this up here.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
This is Tommy Agee, 1969 World Series. A world champ, right? World champ.
How did you get this? Because I can't believe the Mets.
I don't know how he got it. I don't know.
Wow, that's crazy. Hey, listen, Marsh just found the clip if you guys want to see it, the first
pitch. Yeah, I want to see it. Let me see it.
Go ahead.
Bring it up. Did you warm up before you threw it?
Chili Davis insisted I warm up. I didn't want to warm up. I said, oh, well, warm up for what? It's a ceremonial pitch. Who cares? He goes, you better warm up.
Okay.
All right. Let's
so
get
I play with my kids
please
all the time.
Ladies and gentlemen, please direct your attention to the pitcher's mound for the ceremonial first pitch.
Can I talk over this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Terry, you're going to watch now. I'm going to do a tribute to Turk Wendell.
No kidding.
Who played for you.
And who's one of my favorite people on earth, too.
Oh, really?
Oh,
with
God.
The crazy shark teeth. Here's my tribute to Turk Wendell. Now, watch this pitch. From the rubber, sidearm, bingo.
Right there.
Yeah.
Wow, you didn't even warm up?
I did warm up. I warmed up with Chili Davis.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So, Jared, when I managed the Angels, Adam Sandler came out to throw the first pitch out. He threw in the bullpen underneath the stadium for 30 minutes because he wanted to throw from the rubber. And I said, just throw it in there. You know, nobody's in the batter's box. Just toss it in there. No, I'm going to throw it from a rubber. He warmed up for 30 minutes to throw it.
Wow.
So that's why I wanted to know if you.
How did he do?
Okay, but it wasn't as good as that one.
Jeepers. I've looked at a lot of them. Now in that clip, I'm 65 years old. I'm 72 now. 65-year-old guy in the non-athlete category, which is my category. I have searched many first pitches. George Bush's is one of the most famous. September 11th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a great one. Under tremendous pressure. But number one, he was an athlete. And number two, I think it was a little high. I don't know if it was a stretch.
It, you know, and now today, not obviously now today, we could appeal that.
We could ABS it. Yeah.
Was it a strike or not? Let's appeal it. Let's see if we can delay the ceremony a little longer. So yeah.
What's your feeling, Terry? What do you think about ABS?
Well, Jerry, I'm a real believer in people. I'm a real believer that the game is played by people. And we're none of us are perfect. And so, you know, we used to get, which we got every month, we got all of the data that they had on umpires. And you knew, I mean, these guys are 95% right. I mean, they're calling 400 pitches a night. Wow. And so to take that away, you know, and I know Bobby Valentine totally disagrees with me, but I just think, you know, gosh almighty, what, you know, I was watching the replay last night. Pete Alonso's up. I don't know if you probably didn't see it, but Pete Alonso's up last night in the game. He's got a 2-2 count, and he takes a fastball right down the middle. I mean, right down the middle for strike two. Uh-huh. And I'm thinking, okay, now, if that ball's on the edge, does he swing at it? I mean, is he looking inside? Did he take the pitch down? I mean, so there's a human mistake right there. He's not going to get criticized for it. I mean, nobody says anything. So an umpire who, you know, now what happened years ago with the Braves and that pitching staff when the strike zone was like this big wide, that's a little off the charts. Yeah. But, you know, to do it three times, you know, and now you can see now you got to pick your spot when you want to do it. So do you want to do it if it's 3-2 to lead off the inning? Yeah, maybe. But middle of the game, you know, close call. Oh, that's on the zone or that's in the zone. I'm sorry. I just think.
How do you feel about instant replay? How about the replay challenges? Are you in favor of that?
Well, I still think they should speed it up, but I think there's a spot for that a little bit. But, you know,
well,
Jerry,
if you're going to do that,
I know. I understand. But
would be fine if they had none of it. I'd be fine.
I would be too. Tough.
It's tough in today's world with television, you know.
Right.
We're watching the game. We see the box.
And that box is good. You know, that box is changing. How can that box be the same for Aaron Judge as it is for Jose Altuve? Can't be.
Well,
it's not, but
the thing, they've done a lot of talk about those two guys, and I think they say that the box is 6 inches different. 6 inches different. The guy's 2 feet taller. How could it be 6 inches?
I know.
And they talk about the letters. Where are the letters? I mean, the letters are, it's really weird. I don't know. How did they come up with this?
I'll tell you the one rule, Jerry, that I can't watch, that runner at second base in the 10th inning. I can't watch that.
Oh, really?
I had breakfast with Sandy Koufax about 3 months ago.
Wow.
And we're talking, and I asked Sandy, I said, how would you, he pitches 9 innings. So here he goes out, he's pitched 9 innings. He's thrown, you know, 140 pitches. He's got 17 strikeouts. The guy he struck out 4 times, standing at second base, is the winning run. This guy hasn't put the ball in play yet, and he's now standing at second base. And Sandy said, I'll tell you what I'd do, Terry. He said, I'm going to walk the next guy intentionally.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to get a double play. Then I'm going to strike the last guy out. And I'm going to tip my hat and say, I'm seeing you later. Yeah, you can do it, Sandy. You can do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like the look of it either. But it's kind of like the tiebreaker in tennis, you know, whatever they call that. You know, they're just trying to wrap up the game. They figure, you know, it's just yeah, I wouldn't mind getting rid of that, too. I would get rid of that. I don't like the free runner. It looks weird. What's he doing out there? How do you get out there?
And who gets the, you know, in a lot of these guys, if you hear the stories, Jerry, you should hear the stories of the players today about why they don't bunt. You know why they don't bunt?
No.
Because it takes away from their exit velocity, which takes away from their war. You know, that war category. So when you negotiate, when you go in and negotiate your next contract, one of the things they look at is your war, Well, if you do some of these little things, your WAR is subtracted. Stealing bases. You know, if you steal base and get thrown out, it takes away from your WAR. I mean, I've heard some of the craziest things ever.
Right. Yeah. So here's what I'm curious about with Terry Collins. Because here's what I remember. One of the things I remember the most about Terry Collins, which, and I loved your years with the Mets. I thought you were a great manager, a great guy. You were a great leader of the team. And all the Met fans I know are very fond of you and your years. One of the things I remember you saying, one of the things that really got me into baseball on another level when I was in the 80s, when I was younger and I was on the road all the time, touring as a, you know, when comedy really took off in the 80s, and I was lucky to be a part of that, is baseball players have to play at a very high level every day. And it's a very similar kind of lifestyle to stand-up comedy. In stand-up comedy, you're going out, you're going to do an hour live show pretty much every day. So it's a similar kind of life, and you're traveling a lot. You're expected to be at a very high level. It's a live show, and it takes a focus and an energy. And I remember you saying all the time, people would ask you questions about, you know, the game that was just played, and you would often say in these interviews, well, my job is to get these guys ready to play tomorrow. That was, you focused on that, that was your job. Make sure these guys are ready to play tomorrow, which I think is a big part of probably being a Major League Baseball player, because it's hard to get ready. You've got, you know, 23 or 22 hours to get ready, and you would do that. But I always wonder, what was that? What do you do when you want to get your team ready? Because you do see teams come out and they don't look ready to play. So what does that entail, would be my question.
Well, I appreciate the compliment, Jerry, but I will tell you, there's a lot of days that, you know, your team didn't look prepared, and I took that personally. I really did. And I got criticized for it because I'm a really intense guy. You know, when you're my size and you had to compete against these guys who were probably bigger and faster. And, you know, for me to compete, I was pretty intense. So when it came down to that kind of how do I get them ready? When I came to New York, there wasn't one day where I thought, you know what, I need to talk to so-and-so. He looks like he's getting a little fatigued. And I'd call him in. It didn't matter who it was, whether it was David Wright or Justin Turner or who it was. But I wanted to make sure they knew that, hey, look, I'm thinking about him. And, do you need a day or not? Because I need you to be ready for tomorrow. You know, today's over. We can't remember what happened today. And I think that kind of helped him a little bit, because I put them in part of being part of the process, you know, and part of the decision. And so the next day they were ready. And there'd be a day, Jerry, I will tell you, there'd be a day like, and David's the perfect example because he never wanted out of the lineup. But I would say, hey, look, I got to get you a day off. And he'd say, what day you think? And I'd say, how about Thursday? And he said, well, let's talk after Wednesday night. because he's not coming out, you know. But what you got on that, the night that he knows he's off tomorrow, their effort is off the charts. Because they're going to rest the next day.
Off the charts.
And so, and then you try to do the same thing with, you know, your with your relief pitchers. I'd go to a guy before the game and I'd say, you got one hitter tonight. One hitter. Right. And so now they come in and it is balls to the wall, man. You know, they know this is the only guy they got to get out, and they get themselves ready for it. So that's kind of how
that's very interesting. Well, it's a little similar in my racket. If I have a four show weekend, two Friday, two Saturday, I gotta hold a little reserve in each show. But if I'm going out to do one show Saturday night for the week, once again, it's a different level. You're going to a different level.
People that, you know, like yourself and Major League Baseball players, you know, that's intense, man. I mean, people think this is easy. Oh, it's, you know, they're talented. You're talented. You're a funny guy. It's not easy. You got to, you know, I used to tell all the people, you know, these guys have lives too. you know, they had an argument with their wife, or they had an argument with their girlfriend, or their kids are sick, or, you know, all sorts of, like, oh, somebody backed into their car. I mean, all that stuff affects them as much as anybody else. And right. So for me, that's the part of the job is of the manager and the coaches to make sure those guys, when that game starts, they're ready as you could get them for that day. So,
okay. That's fantastic. And let me just say, in either of these professions, having a life is a complete waste of time. You should not have a life. You don't need a life. Get rid of your life would be my first advice to anybody going into either of these two worlds. Can we talk about Juan Soto's success stealing bases last year with the Mets?
Uh-huh.
What was that first base coach doing? And I can't believe he's not there anymore. What was his name again, John?
Antoine Richardson.
He's with the Braves now.
Yeah, he's with the Braves. What? First of all, I cannot believe he's not there anymore. How did he do that, and what was he doing?
Well, there, you know, again, Jerry, there's data. Obviously, you know, we can break down every pitcher move to first base for the entire year if we want to. We've got staff to say, hey, look, I want John Smoltz. I want to see every time he's thrown over to first base. And now with all of the camera angles, you've got all sorts of data. And so, but now when you only can throw over two times per hitter,
right?
I mean, that's a goal. That's Ricky Henderson would have stole 750 bases. Maybe a season. Who knows? That kind of data is invaluable. Plus, I think Juan found the freedom to run. I don't think he was blocked. I believe Carlos Mendoza said, look, when you get on, you get the green light. You want to go, you go. And now all of a sudden, with help of the first base coach who's studied all this stuff, he may say, look, this guy has never thrown to first base after a changeup. You know, they're just as an example. So you peek in or, you know, nowadays with this new thing, you can't pick up the signs like you once could have done on the bases. But
right.
I just think he found the freedom to run and wanted to run and then got caught up in it because he was having such great success.
Did you see last night that somebody got thrown out at second? And I think Gary Cohen said it was the first player to get thrown out by the catcher on the Mets in like 102 stealing attempts. 102 in a row.
Yeah.
It's crazy how much this game, to me, the magic of baseball is as much as they mess with it, it's still this amazingly beautiful game. No matter how much it's screwed around with, it's still baseball and it's still incredible. It's so durable and impervious to all the meddling that goes on. I mean, that is a lot of meddling that you can only throw over two times. That's crazy.
I know.
Totally changing the game.
They're changing the game, Jerry. This has been a number of years ago now. But one night I was talking to somebody and they who was in the front office or in the commissioner's office, and they were talking about moving the mound back so there would be more offense because the pitchers were starting to throw so hard that, you know, let's just move the mound back 6 more inches. And so it, you know, it takes that much longer for the ball to get there. These guys that are throwing 100 and 101 now the hitters have a little bit more time to get the bat to the ball. And I'm thinking, you know, let's just play the game that we all grew up watching, for heaven's sakes.
Have you seen the thing that second base has not been in the right place that they had to move
it? No.
Yes.
No.
For decades and decades, second base was not inside the diamond. It was a little outside the diamond, and they moved it a little closer. Have you seen that? Did you see that item, John?
No, I did not, actually.
Yeah, look it up. It's pretty amazing.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen it. Oh, my God.
Maybe it was fake. Maybe it was fake. I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know.
Remember when the internet, you could believe it? That was about 24 hours.
No, I don't. I don't remember.
Yeah. You can't. Forget that.
Yeah, I know.
I tell all the sports writers for years, you know, I used to tell them, I said, oh, that's right. You wrote it, so it's true. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, guys, I know we only have a couple more minutes here. So, first of all, Jerry, I appreciate your time, but I do have a question for you. Out of all the games that you went to over the course of your lifetime and all the teams that you saw, is there any particular game that stands out to you, iconic game? You probably went to so many, and which was your favorite Mets team of all time?
Well, my favorite Mets team is the 69 World Series team, obviously. Not obviously. I mean, I loved 86 too, but you know, Game 6, 86.
Game 6. Were you there?
I was there for 6 and 7. I was in the top section. I had flown from Montana that day, like 4 flights to get there. Yeah. And I remember sitting at Shea Stadium, and the place was empty. And we were still sitting there going, what the hell just happened? How did they how did they win that game? You know, 2 outs, 2 strikes, nobody on base. The World Series is over. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't. That you can't beat that moment. I was there for Andy Chavez's catch and left.
Me too.
I was there for David Wright's homer, Terry, in 2015. But a million great memories. I do not complain ever about how long it's been, because having a team like this and that you can follow and it becomes a part of your life is such a great gift. You know, all my kids are into it. And I explained to them, you have a companion now for the rest of your life that is just there for you. It's like a dog. You need a dog and you need a baseball team. And that's pretty much all there is to life.
That is true. We do want to thank you for your time, Terry. This has been amazing. But there is somebody in the waiting room that we do our next segment, right?
Oh.
So we do this leadoff segment. It's somebody that you might have spent a little time with down in Port St. Lucie. So why don't we say hello to Mr. Sal Licata?
Hi, Jerry.
Oh, my God.
You know, you two, I didn't think I was going to get a chance to talk to you guys. I had the greatest day of my life in one day. I sat with Jerry for 5 innings during that game, and then I went out with TC for dinner and drinks, and I woke up, I didn't remember what happened that night. It was a tremendous, tremendous night. By the way, I was just looking up that second base thing. I don't know where you got that from, Jerry, but I have not heard that either, that second base thing.
Forget it. Just cut that out of the show. That was ridiculous.
There you go. Listen, Sal, we're going to wrap up with Jerry, but you know, I saw you in the waiting room. I wanted you guys to say hello to each other. I know that was a special day for you, and we'll get you on with Laura Albanese in just a second.
Thank you. Yeah, and by the way, John, you started that whole thing because Jerry, it was John that was like, oh, Jerry started following me on Instagram, and we're going to get him on the
Terry. Commented on a bobblehead post, look at this.
That then fed off my insecurities where I was like, well, what the hell's going on here?
I saw that show, and I was like, oh, my God.
No,
guy's heartbroken. I said, this is just – you know, had a conversation with him, and I didn't bring it up to you, of course.
No.
And then I'm at spring training. I'm at that game on Sunday, and then I see a picture of you and Jerry sitting in the sitting together. I'm like, there you go. His dream has come true.
We it was great. We had a great time with Jerry.
It was great.
Everything happens for a reason.
All right.
Listen, thanks, Al. We'll talk to you in just a couple seconds.
Okay.
Here.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. And Jerry, I want to thank you so very much. I know you're on tour across the country. Go to jerryseinfeld.com. You're actually coming to the town I live in, Franklin, Tennessee, in May the 8th.
Oh, okay.
So I know you played TPAC here before, but Franklin, I don't know if you ever visited Franklin, Tennessee. It's a beautiful little town.
I can't wait to see it.
I've been here 26 years, but thank you so much.
You're
Terry,
so welcome.
It's been amazing. Jerry, it's been amazing.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Terry.
Jerry, I really appreciate you coming on. It's great to see you again. And I gotta have somebody dig up that jersey I had made for you that year in spring training when I thought you were coming out. I gotta find that jersey again. So yeah.
I'm sure it's around somewhere.
I'm sure it is too. Well, thanks for being on, and travel safe.
Okay, you too. Thanks, guys.